Thursday, 30th of January, Choftes Shvat, Dr. Sholem Springer. It says topical theme.
Topical theme is this week's Seder.
All right.
Seder coming up. That's, I imagine, as topical as it gets. We're told that as the week progresses, especially this Thursday or Friday, one should talk about the parasha because our minds are on it. So, the best place to start, as a famous author once said, is at the beginning. And we'll start at the beginning, the very first two psukim, by Dabar Hashem el Moshe Leimoya, Dabel B'nai Yisrael V'yikhu Li Truma. Now, we'll start at the beginning as well with the very first Rashi, because Rashi says V'yikhu Li Truma, just two words, and these words will turn out to be absolutely critical. Li Lishmi. Li means that do it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we've just had, and you know, lots and lots of seders and Tzias Mitzrayim, ending up with Matan Torah and Mishpatim last week. And now we're coming on to a new theme in Sefer Shemais, which is four and a half seders, some of Kisiso as well. Of course, Truman Tetzaveh and Vayalkan Pekudei deal exclusively virtually with the Mishkan and its Kalim. And even some of Kisiso does too. So the Torah has put, let's put it this way, many, many column inches into talking about the Mishkan and its detail. And the Torah here says that the Mishkan should be built, the Mikdosh should be built, Li Lishmi. Now, what's going to follow, the first part of this talk, I prepared really from the writings of Rav Chaim Shmulevitch in Sichas Musa. In fact, while I was driving yesterday, I was listening to a tape. Yes, my car still plays tapes, actually. I was listening to a tape of Rabbi Bernstein, and he quotes the Malbim with more or less the same vort. So, Shneim Kibnu Ledova Echad, either way, mine it is not. So, it's coming from very good pedigree, very, very good sources. So, what we can do here, both of these Mephoshim say, is most interestingly, we can look at some psukim in Melachim. Melachim Aleph, capital Hay. We have the story of Shlomo, who's just about to build the Beis HaMikdosh, and he has got to appeal to Hiram, to Hiram of Tyre, for certain materials. And he writes to him, he talks to him, and he says the following. Vayishlach Shlomo es Hiram leimoy. Ati odato es David Ovi. You know about my father, ki lo yochoy livnois bayis l'shem Hashem. He was unable to build a Beis HaMikdosh l'shem Hashem. Elokov, b'bnei ha-melchoma asher sevavuhu. Because he was concerned with wars which basically surrounded him. Ateis Hashem oisom tachas kapois ragloi. Until HaKadosh Baruch Hu had allowed him to vanquish his enemies. Now I am in a situation, says Shlomo, that there is nothing stopping me at all, nothing preventing me. Now I've promised, as HaKadosh Baruch Hu had commanded, had told David, that in fact it will be Leimoy Bincha Asher Eten Tachtecha, that the son who takes over from you Al Kisecha and will sit on your throne. Who Yivne Habayis Lishmi? He will build a Beis HaMikdosh, a house in my name, for my name, Lishmi. Now, those are the psukim in Melachim. And we notice that what Shlomo is telling Hiram is that my father David could not build a Beis HaMikdosh because he was surrounded by wars. Mipnei HaMelchoma Asher Sevavuhu. Now, in fact, there are three themes here, three reasons why Shlomo mentions wars of David, and this will give rise to reasons why David couldn't build the Beis HaMikdosh. And the first one is Poshut Pshat. In order to build something as grand as the Beis HaMikdosh, with all its detail, and with all the plans they've got to put forward, you need a tremendous amount of organization. And it's a very large project. It's a mega project. And we know, do we not, that even in peacetime, look at the Channel Tunnel and other mega projects, that even in peacetime, all our projects seem to go over budget and they take much, much longer. It's a very, very large operation. Building a Beis HaMikdosh got to be absolutely perfect. And David was concerned with other things. He was doing battles. and making Eretz Yisrael safe, and therefore he could not undertake to build a Beis HaMikdash at this time. So, just Poshut Pshat is he was concerned with wars and therefore couldn't enter into such a project as building the Beis HaMikdash. That's number one. Number two is actually Halacha. Halacha says that, and quoting Torah, and in fact Rashi quotes it here, when he says, when Shlomo says to Hiram, Lo Yochel Livnois Bayis, Lo Yoyo Rishoi Mibnei HaMelchomo, he couldn't do so because Melchomo Voksiv Oime Ve'niach Lechem Mekol Oivechem. The Torah mandates that there are three things that you've got to do when you come to Eretz Yisrael, and those three things are to appoint a king, and you've got to then vanquish your enemies, and then finally you build a Beis HaMikdash. So therefore David, on halachic grounds, could not build the Beis HaMikdash because the enemies hadn't yet been vanquished. And therefore he's got to conduct those wars, and while he's conducting the wars, and while he's making Eretz Yisrael safe, you are not allowed to build a Beis HaMikdash. Can't build a Beis HaMikdash until the enemies are vanquished. So therefore that's the second reason why he mentions wars and why David could not build Beis HaMikdash. So we've got two things so far. And the main one's coming, which we will concentrate on. Firstly, he was busy. That's the first thing, on practical grounds. The second thing is halacha, enemies first, and then Beis HaMikdash. Now, what we've learned in this week's Sedra, the one posuk that we've done together, is that when you build a Mikdash, it's got to be Li Lishmi. And the point is that building, whether it's a Mishkan or a full-blown Beis HaMikdash, it's not the building. It's the way it's done, the kavanas that go into it, that's the main part of a Beis HaMikdash. A modoya, a dwelling place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, has got to be totally Lashem Shemayim. If there's any Shem Shemayim missing in some way, then it invalidates the Beis HaMikdash, invalidates the Mishkan. And therefore a Beis HaMikdash has got to be built without any ulterior motive. It's got to be done kuloi l'shem shemayim, and only l'shem shemayim. There must be no personal gain in building a Beis HaMikdash. And as we said, we have all the detail about how the people brought their gifts to the Beis HaMikdash, to the Mishkan, and we see that Bezalel had the seichel. We have these stories about Bezalel had the seichel to understand the kavanas in which the people brought the gifts to the Mishkan, and he could tell where to put them, whether very close to the inside of the Mishkan or further outside. He understood exactly the kavanas in each and every person. So he wasn't just a craftsman. He was, as you'd say in Yiddish, a Menschenskenner. He knew his people. He understood with what reason, whether people were just bringing the gifts to the Beis HaMikdash because their neighbor brought a gift and they had to match it, or whether it was really Li Lishme, whether it was really Lishma. Because that is the specification of the Beis HaMikdash and the Mishkan, that it's got to be Li Lishme, it's got to be totally Lishem Shemayim. And we see, Sukkim I read before, wonder whether you picked this up, that three times Shlomo, when he's talking to Hiram, mentions this concept. In Yuzayin, in the second of Sukkim that I read, Hashem, he says. Then he goes on to say, in Tupsukim later, Hashem. And then he goes on, in the last pasuk it is, and he says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told David, Ovi, Leima Bincha, She'etein Tachticha, Tachtecha, Al Kisecha, Hu Yivne Bayis, Lishmi. So in the space of a few psukim, this theme of Lishmi is mentioned three times. So you can see it's pretty important. So, it's very difficult for a person to do something, l'shem shemayim, if there is any personal interest mixed in. If there's something that we are doing because we are getting a benefit from it, it's very difficult to do that thing, l'shem shemayim, totally l'shem shemayim. It's virtually, I suppose, virtually impossible. And we'll see, even one of the greatest tzaddikim in the world who ever lived, David HaMelech, we'll see that even he was unable to do that, if he had a personal interest. So it's very hard to ignore personal interest, and it's very difficult, almost impossible to do that, and to do something at Hashem Shemayim, if there is some sort of interest that we might have in doing whatever we happen to be talking about. We're talking about building a Beis HaMikdash. Okay, so we might ask the question now, where is the personal interest in building a Beis HaMikdash? Where was the personal interest for David? So there must have been something there. And what they suggest, both of the sources that I'm quoting, they both suggest the same thing, that it lies in here. Now, the first thing is that Nosson HaNovi had already promised David HaMelech that when the Beis HaMikdash is built, that will herald a time when there will be no wars. It'll stop all the wars. When we have a Beis HaMikdash, we won't have any wars. So we can already see that there is a connection between the Beis HaMikdash and having a Beis HaMikdash and the cessation of wars, the cessation of battles. So we can now sort of see that David HaMelech, who had to conduct all these wars, might have had an interest in a Beis HaMikdash, because he was probably the first person that would have wanted to stop those wars and not to keep on fighting and fighting. He would have wanted to stop those wars. So therefore, if the Beis HaMikdash is that which will help to stop those wars, he would have had an interest in building a Beis HaMikdash. That's the first thing. And now we come to an unusual source. The unusual source is, well, it's almost Rosh Chodesh Adar, even though it's Adar Rishon, but we can have our sights on Purim as well. And our second source comes from none other than Haman. Haman said the following, and it's in Medrash Esther, and it says the following, when Haman was, I wouldn't say twisting the arm of Achashverosh, but certainly persuading Achashverosh that the Jews are up to no good, and it's not worth his while in retaining the Jews and plotting what he did against the Jewish people, he said this, when the Jews go out to war, nichnosim l'soicha, l'soicha l'beis hamikdash. When the Jews go out to war, what they do first is they pop in to the Beis HaMikdash, says Haman to Achashverosh. Umachashofim b'soicha. They do all sorts of witchcraft there. Yeah, they cast their spells in this Beis HaMikdash. Shem yotzim mimenu. When they come out of this Beis HaMikdash, then they have this power that they've cooked up through their witchcraft. Hirgin, they start murdering and killing. Umachrivim es oilom. And they are set on a course of the destruction of the world. So this is what Haman was saying to Achashverosh. Now we know it from, of course, the Nazis and all the other Rishoyim. Some of them are very well versed in what we Yidden do. Yeah, they actually study what we Yidden do. So if you find a statement by Haman, it's not going to be totally off the wall. There is going to be some basis for what he says. And what he is saying is that it is the power. Of course, he adds in a little bit of a lie there, machashofim, witchcraft. Of course, we know there's no witchcraft at the Beis HaMikdash. But the element, the kernel of truth of what he's saying is that the Beis HaMikdash did give Klal Yisrael the power to conduct their battles and to win those battles. And therefore, that is the bit of truth that he actually was talking. So we see, Haman was saying that with that Beis HaMikdash, they can win their battles and we will lose against them. They can always invoke that Beis HaMikdash against us, was Haman saying to Achashverosh. So you see that from those two sources, both what Nosson HaNovi said to David HaMelech, that the wars will cease, and what Haman was saying to Achashverosh, that the Beis HaMikdash can be a helpmate for us in winning our battles. And therefore, I won't call it a weapon of war, but it can be used in such a way that it'll ensure that the Yidden will win their wars. So it's a benefit that would prevent David HaMelech from building totally L'shem Shemayim, because he would have an interest in the Beis HaMikdash, because the Beis HaMikdash would help him to conduct his battles and wars. So, therefore, that is what Shlomo HaMelech meant when he said to Chiram, Milchomos Asher Sivavuhu. Look at the Pasuk again, and we can read it slightly differently. He says, Bibnei HaMilchomo Asher Sivavuhu, that the wars that surrounded David HaMelech are teis Hashem oiso. So I'm reading the wrong part. Ki lo yochel livnos bayis l'shem Hashem. He couldn't build. David HaMelech could not build a bayis l'shem Hashem. Elakob mivnei hamelchama asher sevavuhu. You see, so Shlomo HaMelech says actually beforeish that the reason why David HaMelech couldn't build a base of Mikdash l'shem Hashem is because of the wars. So he's connected it.
Benefit from
Beis
HaMikdash Karbonos. Even a Yochid, even Shreve, anybody would have. Even Shreve, you also have the benefit for
the Karbonos.
So
yes. That is true. But we don't have a direct material benefit. We don't have. What we do is when we bring a korban, for example, korban as well has got to be lishmi. It's got to be lishma. We have a benefit of kapora. That is not a material benefit. That's not. You can't compare it to something like, you know, being sure to winning a battle when you have a kapora, which is something which is pure ruchnis. Pure ruchnis, of course, is the province of the Beis Hamikdash. What the chiddush is here is that we have something that is called kashmis. It's the kashmis, the ability to win a battle through the Beis Hamikdash. It's very, very different from the whole purpose of the Beis Hamikdash, which is kolei ruchni. Kolei ruchni fashteach. And about it, we have a benefit from everything ruchnis. When you open a safe, you have a benefit from ruchnis. But that's not the benefit we're talking about. We're talking about the benefit of winning a war or other material benefits. There, that's a chiddush, and that's something which is new for the Beis Hamikdash to be part of. Okay, so Loicho Yochel Libnois L'Shem Hashem. And we are told that later on in the Psukim, there in Melachim, that when Hiram heard this, Yismach Ma'id, he was very, very happy about this message. And Vayomer Baruch Hashem Asher Noson L'David Ben Chochom. He says, Baruch Hashem, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave David this wonderful, this wise son. And the Ralbag asks, well, what's wise about that message? What's wise? And we come back to this. That Hiram understood that a Beis HaMikdash has got to be built Lishmi. It's got to be built Lishem Shemayim in such a way, in such a perfect way. And that's why he's explaining that David HaMelech couldn't build it because there was an interest in it, and therefore he couldn't build it Kulo Lishmi. Now, we said at the beginning of this sedra, Me'ez Kolisha She'id Ven Oliboy, is the same idea, that all the presents, all the gifts that Klal Yisrael brought for the building of the Beis HaMikdash were meant to be Yid Ven Oliboy. Now we know that the Avnei Shoham and the Avnei Meluim were listed last. Now the Avnei Shoham and Avnei Meluim were extremely valuable gems, very, very valuable. We know from the story in the Kiddushin and another place in Shas about how much the Chachamim were prepared to pay for the Avnei Shoham, Avnei Meluim. So they're certainly more valuable than bits of Nechoshes. And even Zohar v'Chesed, these Avnei Shoham, Avnei Meluim, were very, very valuable, and yet they are listed last. And Chazal tell us, we all know this Chazal, is because these were the responsibility of the Nesiim. The Nesiim were charged with bringing certain things, and what they did was, they left it to last. They decided that we're going to wait till Klal Yisrael have brought all their presents, and whatever is missing, we will be mashlim whatever is missing. Now that's very nice because they could be into a very big bill. You know, you don't know how much or how little Klal Yisrael are going to bring. And were it short, they could be into, you know, an enormous sum of money. In fact, what happened was they missed the boat altogether. By saying that we will be mashlim the rest, then in fact it was held against them that it lacked a certain nedivah slave and certain enthusiasm. Because with Lishmi, with Lishma, and all these ideas, and Lishem Shemayim, goes enthusiasm. It's not only the kavona that I want it for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but with that kavona goes enthusiasm. You're enthusiastic about it. And there seems to be some lack of enthusiasm in the attitude of the Nesiim, and that's why Chazal tell us, Rashi brings it, that they're written Nesom, they're written Nesiim without a Yud. Yeah, there's a Yud missing, to say that there's something missing from their attitude of Nediva slave. So even though the Kavanah was indeed Lishem Shemayim, to make sure that the Beis HaMikdash had, or the Mishkan had, everything that it needed, every single thing, and whatever is missing, we will be mashlim, there was Lishem Shemayim, so nothing should go short in the Beis HaMikdash, but nevertheless, that is not the attitude. You bring, and maybe after that, you then mashlim whatever is required. So Nediva slave goes together with enthusiasm. The other reason brought that why the Nesiim weren't given full credit is because the Avnei Shoham came through the Ananim. They came extraordinarily, they came supernaturally, and therefore it was without Yegiyah and without Torah. And when something has no Yegiyah to it, no Torah, then there's something missing. The Gemara says, Rotza Odom, B'Kaf Shaloi, Mitisha Shel Chaveroi. Person likes the cob of corn that he's grown himself, rather than nine of somebody else's. Why? Rashi tells us, Chaviva Olav Al Yidei Shetorach. Because what you put your efforts into, that you're very much attached to. Yesh La'odam Yachas Miuchot. You have a Yachas, you have an attachment, a very special attachment to what you put your efforts and where you invest. That's where you have this special Yachas. And that's why they say that parents love children, because they put so much into their children. Therefore, they have this special Yachas, special love and attachment to children, because they put everything they have into it, and that's why they have this special love, special attachment. Therefore, the nechoshes, even the nechoshes which was given by a poor person, a poshut yid, let's call him, you know, are more valued. They come before the avnei miluim, the avnei shoyim, which are priceless. Nevertheless, it depends on the nediva slave. It depends on the value of li lishmi. And that's the main aspect of Mishkan. That is its purpose. And that then, when it's built, li lishmi, that's a fitting modaya for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a fitting place for HaKadosh Baruch Hu to live. Anything less is not good enough. It's got to be saturated with li lishmi. Now, what I thought of doing, I'm not sure that I'll achieve all my aims today, that was the general, that was the Mishkan in general. And of course, the Mefarshim tell us, in particular I'm going to quote the Klei Yokar, which says that all the Mefarshim have understood that the detail that the Torah gives for the Mishkan and for the Kalim, all this detail, there must be a reason. And he puts it this way, Loi tokin loimer, shekol protim elu hoyu beloi kavona. It cannot be that the Torah gives us such a lot of detail, fine detail, through four and a half sedras, that there isn't a reason for it. And therefore nearly all the Meforshim who explain the Chumash have taken this on, that the detail isn't just a description of this beautiful building, there is a reason for every single detail. We know the Malbim, we know Rav Hirsch, we know lots and lots of Meforshim that have gone into fine detail about the explanations for all the different parts that the Torah describes. Lasas Bem Ramozim Ish Lefi Sichloi, and all the Meforshim have given us explanations of Ramozim that all the Kalim stand for. Zeam Mevachayv, this one says this way and that way, and they're all valid. Vafila Rashi, even Rashi, Shekol Devor Pshutim, Rashi always says, Loi Bossi, Ela Lefarish. Yeah, I'm only coming to give you Pasha Pshat. Even he indulges in it, and he makes one or two quotes here. Okay, like Echsar Kamanil Meloima, therefore I am also not going to hold back. I'm also going to tell you an explanation of my own, says the Klei Yokar, about a particular set of Kalim. And the Kalim we're going to talk about, there are three Kalim in particular that have something in common. And these three Kalim have Zorim. They all have a Zer Zohob, a golden boundary, a sort of filigree boundary. And they are the Oroin, which of course had that projection, which held the Kapoires. Then you have the Shulchan, which also has a Zer Zohob. And you have the Mizbeach HaZohob, which had also this rim, this Zer. And they correspond to the three crowns. They are the Keset Torah, which corresponds to the Oroin. We have the Keset Kahuna, which corresponds to the Mizbeach HaZohov. And we have the Keset Malchus, which is corresponding to the Shulchan. The interesting thing about those three particular Kalim that we're going to single out, because they have a common denominator, is that we've got these crowns together in these three Kalim, of course, because those Zorois, those rims, formed a sort of crown. But when we look at the dimensions of these three Kalim, then something interesting emerges. So we know that the Oron's dimensions were that the top part was 2.5 by 1.5, length 2.5, width 1.5, and its height was 1.5. Notice that all those measurements have a half. None of them are whole figures. None of them are complete digits. When we go to the Mizbeach HaZohov, we have it 1 by 1 by 2. All of them, all the dimensions, are complete figures. And finally, the Shulchan is mixed. The surface is 1 by 2, but the height is 1.5. So it's a mixture of the two. And he gives an explanation. In Ruchnius, for the Oroin, which represents Ruchnius, we are always only halfway there. And all its dimensions are therefore contain a fraction, because we're never complete. And we should only look at people on a higher darga. When you're talking about Ruchnius, look at the people above you and see what you can learn from them and see what it is that I can still do. I'm not there yet, no matter how accomplished you are. In matters which are material, if you go to the Shulchan, then we look at people below us. People who are poorer than us, people who are less than us, and therefore I have enough, I have what I need. And if I look at people that have less than me, I won't feel I need more. So, in Gashmias, I'm complete. In Ruchnias, I'm incomplete. And that's also reflected in Tfilah, of course, the same way, that we should look upwards to those who we can take an example from Hu'a Lamala, Benas, we should look upwards, and for those in Gashmias matters, we look at people who have less than us. Now, with the Oran, as mentioned, it's broken dimensions, it's dimensions containing fractions. I'm always incomplete. As it says, Hachokma, Ma'ayim Timotse, Mi She Choshev, Esatzmoy, La'ayin, Ulachosa. Somebody who thinks of himself as very low, very little, and Chosa, I'm missing something. And Ezeah Chocham, Haloim and Mikalodom. So the Kleioka says the following. Three dimensions correspond to three dimensions, aspects of understanding. The length corresponds to a person's intelligence. So a person who is more intelligent, obviously, can understand more Torah and understand greater concepts. The breadth of ideas is also corresponds to the breadth. How many subjects can a person take in depends on his breadth, and therefore that is the dimension of breadth in the Oran. And finally, its height corresponds to one's depth of understanding. One might have a lot of subjects, one might have great intelligence to be able to take in quite a lot of material, but the question is about the depth that's represented by the height. So in all three dimensions, there is something going to be missing. In all three dimensions of learning Torah and Ruchnias, something's missing. When we come to the Shulchan, this is known as Shulchan Malachim, represents the material. Now here we have a mixture, we said. There's 2x1 on top. That's actually where the Gashmias actually sits, on the surface of the table. How much you raise your Gashmias depends on the height. That should always be half. That should always have a fraction in it. Because there is so and so much that we need and so and so much we should have. And as far as the surface is concerned, I'm complete. But as far as how much I machshid that Gashmias, that's another matter, and we should always be at half measure. And finally, he says, as the Mizbeach HaZohar, well, that's meant to bring us Kapora. Kapora means that's the Hashloma of the human being. What am I missing? The Mizbeach HaZohar helps me to be a Mashlim, helps me to do something which I can't otherwise do, and the Mizbeach and the Beis HaMikdash brings me Kapora, and that's Hashloma, and that's why all its dimensions are whole. Okay, I'm not sure whether the clock has beaten me, but I would like to tell a story that is fairly well known, and it's about Atzei Shittim Oimdim. One of the factors in the Beis HaMikdash was Atzei Shittim Oimdim, that's an expression, and we are told that those Atzei Shittim that they used to build the Mishkan were planted by Yaakov, or according to others, they were planted by Avraham Avinu. So we're talking about the Obus who laid the foundations of these Atzei Shittim, because we are in it for the long term. We are not a fly-by-night company. We're in it for the long haul. We're going to be here for a very long time. And there is a very nice story that I heard. As I say, it's probably pretty well known that this story is as follows, and I will say it in short because we ought to wind down. And that is that there was a journalist who was tasked to have a look at some of the sites in Britain. He was from America. He was sent from America to report for his paper. We're talking about 50 years probably. And he landed up Hadrian's Wall. And Hadrian's Wall was a monument to Emperor Hadrian, who conquered the whole of the Middle East, of course, and of course he also conquered Britain. And they built this wall, actually, to keep out the Scots at the time. But now it's a sort of heap of rubble, and it's now a tourist place that people go. And he went along to see Hadrian's Wall, and he was taking some notes about Hadrian's Wall, pile of rubble, etc. And all of a sudden he remembered he was a journalist, he was Jewish, but sort of on the edge. And he remembered that it was a yacht site. He remembered that day was his yacht site, and he said to others around it, I've got to find a shul. I've got to say Kaddish. So where's the nearest shul near Hadrian's Wall? 13 miles away was the yeshiva of Gateshead. So anyway, they take him to Gateshead Yeshiva. Walks in and is stunned by the learning. It's now, that's why we can date it 50 or 60 years ago, because he describes it as just two houses. They're just two houses, you know. Gates of Yeshiva is not two houses anymore. In those days, just two houses. He walks in, and the basic medrash is pulsing with the learning that's going on. As he walks in, he hears one student, one bocher, saying to the other, "But Rabbi Akiva disagrees." And he knows about, he knows Rabbi Akiva. Everyone knows about Rabbi Akiva. And he realizes the following: that he said Rabbi Akiva disagrees. And that really impressed him. He goes back to America and writes up his report, his travelogue. And he writes about how he visited Hadrian's Wall, a monument to a man who ruled the world, and a man who was in charge of everything, tower, the rest, and all that's left of him is this heap of rubble. And yet, the man he tortured, the man he murdered, Rabbi Akiva, who you would think, after 2,000 years, you wouldn't hear anything, there are still students that are arguing about the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. That's a monument. I'd say, shittim omdim.